And of course, we're going to take your phone calls with Patrick Cook from calls all around the planet right here on Coast to Coast AM. Cattle, you've looked at the cattle mutilations and crop formations. Tell us, Patrick, your take on that.
Well, crop circles are definitely something that has captured the imagination in our modern age. Of course, they go back quite a long time, and of course, it's because of aerial photography and things like that. We've seen a bunch of them, but by my reckoning, somebody's giving us messages. Now, certainly, some of these are man-made, but it is not all man-made like some people believe. And when you consider that there are Julian sets and fractals, mathematics that we haven't even approached, that these crop circles are generating symphonies and new mathematical formulas, there's definitely something there. I think they're speaking to us, but I don't know what they're saying. Somebody may know, but I certainly don't. And cattle mutilations, I've looked at those very sincerely. Now, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people say they're evil UFOs. I mean, they're out there slaughtering animals like in some kind of ritual thing. But when you talk about, now I forget exactly what the forensic scientist science of animal autopsies is, but when those forensic specialists begin to look at cattle mutilations, what they say they think they're seeing is autopsies of autopsies. What they believe is happening is that these animals, it's pretty much large animals, are being examined. The soft tissue is taken, the bodily fluids are drained, and even though they're mutilations, they're done with laser precision. And what's absolutely fascinating is the similarities between the two. If you take a crop circle in a field, if animals happen to be in that field, they will go as far away from it as they possibly can, and they will not eat the crop.
That's right.
In cattle mutilations, animals will not eat the carcass. Carrion eaters will not eat the carcass, and animals will avoid it and go as far away as they can. We find there are a number of similarities. Lights are seen. One of the interesting things about cattle mutilations is that it appears that they are taken. Whatever happens, there's no blood anywhere around on the ground. There's no evidence of a struggle. It appears these things are taken up to a very large height and then unceremoniously dropped after they are finished. But the most interesting thing, and I believe that we're the only ones that have discovered this, is an iron calling card. Around cattle mutilations, there are particles of iron, pure iron, that can be made on this planet, but is so expensive as to make it almost impossible to do it. But they're spread all around the bodies of cattle mutilations, and they find the same particles around crop circles.
Okay, let's go to the calls west of the Rockies. Greg is in Missoula, Montana. Go ahead, Greg. Get us started.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
That's fine.
Hey, I two things I find real interesting is your commercials that where you talk about food storage.
Yes.
Ever since I was a little kid, the people in my church have been teaching us to have food storage.
That's smart.
And now that we're getting closer to maybe you guys might say 2012 or. I'm hearing more and more about food storage and 72-hour kits, and I find that real important and intriguing that that's happening more and more now. The other comment I had was I thought that the Gulf of Mexico was formed by a meteor, possibly. Is that correct?
Well, we know that a asteroid hit near the Yucatan and carved out a pretty good chunk of that area. But it was water anyways, but it was a smaller basin.
I was wondering if that could have weakened the floor of the Gulf of Mexico.
The fissures and everything else. It's a good possibility. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what happened?
That was what my comment was. I thought that was probably a good reason for these fissures and the instability of the rock formations underneath the ocean floor down there. It's probably been maybe destroyed from that.
Well, it is weak, Patrick. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yes. We're dealing, you know, it seems 3 or 4 miles may seem like a lot, but we don't know exactly. You know, there's cracks. They punched a hole in the earth. And obviously,
they wounded the planet.
Yeah, there's a great deal of oil gushing out of there. And I think Richard Hoagland's concepts and a lot of other people are, you know, what's interesting, and they're talking about an evacuation plan of 200 miles from the coast, and the tsunami that they're talking might happen if this crust collapses, could possibly be cause a tsunami. Now, of course, you remember the rumor about the Haiti earthquake being man-made. And when they go out and they do these things for these explorations,
sure,
for these deep sea explorations, they use explosions. What is going on? And what's with these? George, have you noticed all these sinkholes around the world?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, what's up with
huge,
that?
Huge. Next, let's go to Anita in St. Louis. Hey, Anita, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
Just
great. Hey, Patrick. Wonderful job. But I thought you might be interested. I had a couple comments. But when BP released their new logo back in 2000, and they stated that it was based on the sunflower and the Greek god Helios, the sun god who traveled around the world in his chariot and, you know, ended his daily quest each day in the east. And anyway, if you go to Above Top Secret, they have the comparison of the BP logo with the wormwood flower, and it's striking. It's really
a lot
striking.
Of similarities there.
Yeah.
Fascinating, yeah.
But also, the Greek god, his son, Helios' son, stole his chariot and crashed the chariot into the ocean, which then caught on fire.
Huh. Wow.
So that's really frightening. And sorry, I'm a little nervous.
Nah,
but
you're doing
anyway,
okay.
There also is, if you go to the BP oil spill with homemade remedy, there's you can use there's a process out there with hydrogen peroxide that is known by the EPA to and has been used, okay, to clean up these oil spills. And it puts oxygen back into the water. It's completely safe. And yet they are putting these god-awful dispersants out there into our waters. And I think we all just need to scream, not just to the White House, but we need to start screaming to NBC and ABC and all the major affiliates and go to them and ask them, why aren't you bringing us the truth? And,
yeah,
you know, we've got the EPA director just last week stating that none of these dispersants, if there was something toxic in them, they wouldn't be using them.
Yeah, right.
But yet, why aren't we screaming to our major affiliates? Why are they allowing these mistruths, the lies, and everything else to be put out there?
Well, let's get Patrick's reaction. And, you know, Patrick, lots of frustration about this oil leak. Lots.
Absolutely. Well, we have been lulled into the idea that we don't have a voice in what's going on. Now, let me explain something. I have been in media for years, and I know a number of producers in media outlets around the country. And there's one large outlet in San Francisco, the Fox outlet there. And I talked to a producer, and they said, now listen to this. This is amazing. If they get two calls on any issue, two calls from the public, they will bring it up in the editorial board meeting.
Hmm.
What's going in? If they get five calls, they will definitely do a news story on it. And if they get 20 calls on any given issue, they will consider it a movement, a groundswell movement, and they will do a special on it. Now, that's because people simply do not do what this woman is telling us to do, that we need to scream bloody murder about this. And, of course, you know, another thing that's very important is that when we're talking to our representatives, our senators and our representatives in Washington and in the state capitals around the country, please do not send them emails. Do not respond to polls. And telephone calls will not do a great deal of good. They delete the emails, they ignore the telephone calls, but if you send them a letter, and if that letter has a return address that has the zip code in which the senator or representative has constituents, they will open that letter. And I guarantee you the most effective way to move our congressmen, which is the way to move, you know, they if they will listen to their constituents, we're the ones that vote them in office. If we get enough people, so snail mail and talking, writing op-eds, writing to your newspapers, send editorialized. George, you know that that's true.
Absolutely.
You know that we can if enough people, and wait, enough people in this society is a dozen. we don't need millions of people to do this. You can affect the government and the media simply by speaking your mind, and that's what we need to do.
Pete's in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Pete. Go ahead.
Morning.
Morning.
I was calling about the Hopi prophecy of the True White Brother. I was just wondering if there's an update on that. And also, I just wanted to make a quick reference to the Man of Lawlessness, who would be the Antichrist. And that guy is referred to in the Book of Daniel, and Christ refers to him as a man of lawlessness.
What do we know about the Hopi prophecy, Patrick?
Sorry.
Well, the Hopi prophecies, as I said, there is a Hopi prophecy that speaks directly to the Gulf spill, but that's from a long series of Hopi prophecies. The Hopi prophecy says, and this is the seventh sign of the Hopi prophecy, you will hear of the sea turning black and many living things dying because of it. Well, the prophecies of the Native Americans are very important, and the Hopi prophecies are interesting. My editor particularly is looking for the space station to fall out of the sky.
Really?
because one of the prophecies is about a dwelling place in heaven attached to the earth that will fall from the sky.
Well, what about the old former Soviet Union's the Mir spacecraft? How about that? That basically fell from the sky.
Yeah, but...
that was their little space station.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things. Have you ever really looked, George, at the number of satellites we've got out there?
It's so much so, the Air Force is sending up but it was postponed. They were going to send it up over the last day or two, but there was a software malfunction. But they will send up another satellite to witness debris in other satellites.
Yes.
There's just too much up there.
Oh, yeah. We have so clogged space that it's almost impossible to move up there.
It's like going through an intersection and cars are darting all over the place.
And then on top of that, we've got this incredible network of Star Wars, that they call Star Wars. They've got a laser platform up there, George, they call the Death Star. It's amazing, the weapons that they have up there. And
that we really don't know about.
Well, we know about it because they actually are stupid enough to name these things and tell us about it. And I have it on good authority, Stanton Friedman and others, that these weapon systems are pointed outward and not inward. What are they doing up there? What is NASA? Why is NASA's budget, why is 85% of NASA's budget black ops?
Yeah.
In other words, 15% is the Gemini, Apollo, the space station, all of that is only 15% of the budget. What are they doing with that other 85%?
Let's go to Atlanta, Georgia. Drew's there, east of the Rockies. Drew, take it away.
Hey, George. Hey, Patrick. How are y'all doing?
Just fine.
Okay. I just wanted to give a little feedback on a Revelations verse that I was looking at.
All right.
16. And, you know, George, you were talking about 2012. You think something's going to happen with the sun. And in this Revelations, it says, and the fourth angel poured out his veil upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. It sounds a lot like a solar flare or a X flare.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And, you know, we're coming up to that season, too.
Yeah, well, yeah. I also pointed out that the Copenhagen Convention, you know, I mean, when you talk about 1 degree Fahrenheit increase in temperature, which we've already seen since the first of the century, 2 degrees, possibly 3 degrees, but they're talking about 4 degrees Celsius. That's a lot. That's like at least 8 to 12 degrees. We can't we can't survive 4 degrees Fahrenheit. We can't survive 3 degrees Fahrenheit. And definitely, we see as the atmosphere is thinning, we see some incredible things happening. I mean, look, we're going through a record break every season. There's record breaking heat waves. We're having one right now here on the East Coast. That's just devastating. And I know that, you know, I mean, come on, fine wine in England, olives in England, they're growing olives in England, and they're growing fine wine. The Northwest Passage is open. If that isn't a sign that the sun is heating the planet up, a lot of people debunk global warming, but that doesn't deny the fact that it's definitely getting warmer.
Well, I mean, to me, global warming is created in this solar system, not by man, but it's happening.
Well, whatever it is, it's happening, and we're definitely feeling it.
Okay, let's see if we can get Randy in Pasadena, California. Randy, go ahead.
Hi, George. Just wanted to share a little bit about the Mark of the Beast. Listen, for the listeners, the a lot of people look to the European market, the money market, for some sort of sign for revelation concerning the Mark of the Beast. And I just wanted to share that that nobody doesn't have anything to worry about, that the Mark of the Beast is not going to be seen at all. No one's not going to see the Mark of the Beast. When Jesus was in the resurrection, he appeared as different people, and those people that he appeared as were people in time. And that's what the Mark of the Beast means. The sacrifice is in time, and the only place that the image of the beast or the beast is going to be seen is going to be in the Holy of Holies, and that's in heaven.
All right, well, let's get Patrick's take on it in the last minute we have before the break. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, everybody has their own opinion about what these prophecies mean. I don't consider that what he's speaking of as a very strong possibility. But it's interesting. That's what's fascinating about the world that we live in, is that we are, everybody has a different opinion about things, and we need to respect those opinions. So it'd be interesting to look into what he's saying, but I personally don't believe that.
Patrick's website, BibleUFO.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Your work, including The Greatest Deception, is still available, obviously, right?
Oh, yes. My books are available on Amazon.com, and the new documentary series we're doing can be found at DestinyOfMan.tv.
Excellent. And in the work that you're doing up in Connecticut, is there a website attached to that, too?
Well, we haven't set the websites up, but Paranormal CT is one of them, and NEstonechambers.com are available.
Okay, well, sit back, Patrick. We're going to be back with you in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll come right back with final phone calls. So don't touch your dial. If you need to email me, that's George@CoastToCoastAM.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking about the dark world of video game addiction. It's an incredible program with Ryan Van Cleve. You'll also hear a clip of a little guy whose mother has told him to get to bed, and he doesn't want to do it. And it's just truly unbelievable. But that's our next Coast to Coast show. When we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Patrick Cook as we talk about The Greatest Deception on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Terry in Nevada, does this guest think that those who have the mark of the beast, are they immediately cast into hell? That's his text message. What do you think about that, Patrick?
I don't believe that anybody will be cast into hell. I believe that hell has been completely misconstrued by the church, by the mainstream concepts. There is a place called hell, a lake of fire, in which the beast and Satan, basically, will be imprisoned. But the concept of a fiery hell, the mark of the beast, I don't think I don't think anybody's going to be really condemned. A lot of people don't pay any attention to the prophecy about the people that are cast into the lake of fire. It doesn't say that people are cast in the lake of fire that had the mark of the beast. What it says is that Satan, who caused, or the beast that caused the people to have that mark, was cast into the lake of fire. No, I don't believe that I don't believe that anybody's going to be condemned to hell. Come on, after all, we are talking about a God that's described in the Bible as fair and loving and just. does hell work in that context? It doesn't to me.
doesn't to me either. Sheridan, Wyoming, Kevin, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yes, Patrick, I'm absolutely loving this topic. This is just something right up my alley. I do have a very interesting question for you.
Okay.
With everything that you've been going over through this program, what is your take about the Nephilim that is described in the Holy Bible and Planet Nerubu, or also known as Planet X?
Well, the Nephilim, the word Nephilim comes from the Old Testament. It's actually not Nephilim. The word Nephilim does not appear in the Hebrew. It's Nephil. And Nephil is the word from which the word giants was translated in Genesis 6:6, talking about when there were giants on the earth in those days. It was actually the giants, not fallen angels. The giants themselves were called Nephil. It doesn't mean the fallen ones. It doesn't mean those who fell from the sky, as Zechariah Sitchin incorrectly states that it does. I do not believe that Zechariah Sitchin is as much a Sumerian scholar as he claims to be. I believe that his credentials are, he does have a CV, but it's in economics. It's not in Sumerian text, and he is not highly regarded by his peers, quote-unquote, even though his peers don't consider him a peer. I do not believe he's a scholar in that text. And Nibiru and the Anunnaki and all of that, and the concept that there's a planet that comes into our solar system and these aliens jump off of it, enslave our people to mine gold for their atmosphere machines on Nibiru, I think is a very interesting science fiction concept, but I don't believe it holds any weight in the Sumerian text.
Okay, that's it. Let's go to Dean, Appleton, Wisconsin. He's a first-time caller. Hi, Dean.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Patrick, I have a quick question for you and a quick comment for George.
Sure.
Sure.
Patrick, do you believe that some animals, such as dogs and cats, have souls? And George, I just want to say I am so happy that you are playing Rush for your bumper music. They are a great band. Thank you.
You got that. Yeah. Dogs and cats, souls. I think they do. Patrick, what about you?
I'm inclined to believe that. I can't say for sure because I'm one of those purists insofar as knowledge goes, unless it's absolutely proven to me. But I certainly believe that there's a very strong possibility that animals do have souls, not in the same nature as man, but definitely that seems to be not only provable. That seems to be the view of a number of ancient writings.
Okay, it's Trini's turn now in Eureka, California, west of the Rockies. Trini, go ahead.
Good evening, George and
Hi.
Patrick. I've been a long-time listener, and I would like to just hit a few of the subjects you brought up concerning, a few of them. Go through my readings. I've studied over 30 years, and I'm bringing some of this out of the New English Bible, which includes the Apocrypha. And we'll first go, if you don't mind, to it's in the second book of Esdras in chapter 12, and it's speaking about, I believe, the prophecy, what's going on in the Gulf, and how the British are rising back up. And it says, as for the lion, which you saw coming from the forest, roused from sleep and roaring, which you heard addressing the eagle, which represents America, taxing it with its wicked deeds and words, this is the Messiah, who in the Most High has kept back until the end. He will address those rulers, taxing them openly with their sins, their crimes, and their defiance. He will bring them alive to judgment and will convict them or destroy them. But he will be merciful to those of my people that remain, all who have kept them safe in my land. And goes on to talk, and I believe that might be for the people of the Gulf. And then going over about when you were talking about, again, the race of giants and how do people, did they fly away? How do new races begin? How have we gone on after maybe they were wiped out? And you can go to the Wisdom of Solomon, book 14, verse 6, and it says, even in the beginning, when the proud race of giants was being brought to an end, the hope of mankind escaped on a raft and piloted by the hand bequeathed to the world a new breed of men. And just real quickly, touching on the subject about the dead and if they're ghosts and so forth, again, this is in the Wisdom of Solomon. It says, man in his wickedness may kill, but he cannot bring back the breath of life that has gone forth, nor release a soul that death has arrested. So if we murder, maybe those souls are still wandering, which goes on into bringing them, thinking that their secret sins might escape detection.
All right, well, let's get Patrick's reaction.
Well, could I just one last quick one after that?
No. We've got way too many callers. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I actually wrote a book called The Lost Books of the Bible, The Real Apocrypha. And she is quoting from those books that were removed from the Bible, believe it or not, in 1885 due to a paper shortage. The books of the Apocrypha, the 15 books of the Apocrypha, represented about 15% of the entire Bible and 400 years of history that were removed. And there are some very, now, I don't deal that much with the Apocrypha because of the fact that I deal with the Christian church and they do not accept the Apocrypha as legitimate verse. My editor is the one who deals with those, but definitely my book, The Lost Books of the Bible, The Apocrypha, cover a great deal of those things, and we have also a book out called The Lost Books of the Bible, The Supernatural, which covers those things that she's talking about in the Apocrypha and in other lost books of the Bible.
What does this tell you about everything that's going on right now, Patrick, in terms of, you know, the things we've talked about over the last 3 hours? I mean, it's just too bizarre, isn't it?
Yes. I live in a very strange world, as you can imagine, George, actually waking up and seeing the sunrise and, you know, trying to carry on a normal life with all this understanding behind me. But you learn to live with it. And what happens, it gives you a much better perspective on the world, and most especially the beauty of the message that comes out in the bottom line when the wash is done and it finally all comes out. What it amounts to is loving your fellow man and caring and sharing. The Greeks had a beautiful word for unconditional love. It was agape, and it simply means to give. And that's what I believe, knowing that, above all, that's where it's actually going. You know, the doom and gloom prophets, I don't know how they can live with themselves. I mean, if that's what they actually believe. But I believe the world will change for the better, that mankind will reach a higher level of spiritual consciousness, and that we will move forward, and we will enter into a world of love, without war, with peace. We live in a world now that the science trumps spirituality. We have a whole different concept. The world is so a cappella. It is so empty if you just follow what the mainstream is telling you. But if you look at the ancient writings and look at the pronouncements of the spiritualists and the people that like the Dalai Lama, and we need to study the great masters of the world and realize that what they were talking about is where we need to be and where we need to go. And the great thing about it is that I have hope, and that's what I hope to bring to humanity, is hope that we do have a brighter future instead of a bleak world ready to explode at any moment.
But it will be a bumpy road, won't it?
Of course it will, but nothing of any importance is ever gained without work and without a lot of effort. And so, but I think we're all going to survive it, George.
Okay.
I don't think this God chooses and is bigoted about anybody. He didn't create, I mean, go through the trouble of creating. If this God did create mankind, he created them all. And I cannot see any life being a waste. I think they're all salvation, whatever you consider that to be, is going to come to all. But as long as we, you know, as long as people don't go to bed hungry, and people go to, you know, look forward with hope and with a bright consciousness about what's happening in the future, that's what's important.
Let's go to Prior Lake, Minnesota. Eli's there. Hey, Eli, welcome to the program.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Hey, I'm really excited to be on. I can't even believe it.
You made it.
Yeah. I'm a longtime listener from Minnesota here.
Thank you.
I really wanted to talk to you and Patrick about the Billy Meyer case, because I just recently got into it.
Sure.
And in the, I've been reading the transcripts, and there is some direct information about the extraction of oil and the connection between that and the earthquakes.
Absolutely. And
if I could, I have a couple of short things I could read real quick from the contacts.
Well, let's just we'll paraphrase that, because Michael Horn, who's his U.S. representative, has talked about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, basically Billy has said that from his visitations, he's been told that if you pull the oil out of the planet, you got to expect major earthquakes. Strange, Patrick, but could be.
Oh, yeah. Well, that sort of makes sense, doesn't it? You put vacuums in the ground, something's gonna break.
Yeah.
We see this with, you know, our groundwater. You know, we're using up our groundwater. And these, like I say, what are these sinkholes about? Something is really going on.
Well, and in this particular case, you know, we had an earthquake in Southern California today. Then we had many aftershocks. We're coming up to a new moon. You always have a problem when that happens. And we're coming up to a full moon in a couple weeks. Who knows what's going to happen then, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are strange forces. I mean, I was in the Navy. I know what kind of effect the moon can have, what moon phases can have and things like that. But it'll be very interesting to see. And I certainly, if the most important thing, George, is that I hope that I am right. I don't want to think that I'm wrong, that we do, that mankind does have hope, and that there is a brighter future
I
coming.
I hope you're right, too. St. Louis we go. Michael, it's your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Okay.
Good to hear from you. I just wanted to call and talk to you guys about the relationship. I talked to you back in July 4th, 2004, when I was in Spokane, out of town. And we were talking then about how the Mayan calendar and the revelation might actually match up together, that the Mayan calendar might actually kind of set off the Book of Revelation, and then those trials and tribulations may come. And then I just kind of agreed to disagree that we didn't know at the time. And I thought that was interesting, considering what you guys were talking about. I've been listening to the show for a long time. Great fan of you, George. Maybe one day I'll run into you in St. Louis. But speaking,
oh yeah, absolutely.
I saw those fireballs over St. Louis on 4th of July. On two separate nights.
What did they look like to you, Michael?
On July 3rd, Saturday night, I was at T.R. Hughes Park in O'Fallon, Missouri, and I didn't notice them until they were pretty much just right over top of my head. And I looked up, and I'm a private pilot. And I'm an aerial photographer, so I'm used to seeing different things in the skies. You can go, that's an airplane, that's a helicopter landing at St. John's or something. These things were like, it was like a small sun, basically.
Weird.
How the sun gives off, it kind of rolls and has different movements off it. It was like that. It was like a fireball, a floating fireball. It seemed to have something above it, but you couldn't really tell what it was.
A floating fireball, a small one because it was far away, or small because it was close?
As a pilot, I would think it was 30 foot in diameter, probably about 3,000 to 4,000 feet in the air, and traveling about 100 to 150 knots.
Just kind of cruising along.
About 160 miles an hour, no change in direction, just floating. And my wife and I looked at it. We said, hey, you know, is that one of them floating lanterns or something? We thought, no, that's not it.
These things were seen all around the country that night.
Oh yeah.
And Fourth of July itself, we were sitting there.
That Sunday night.
Out Chesterfield, right by the mall, waiting for the Chesterfield fireworks to come up. And from the south, or from the west, because down there is where Spirit of St. Louis Airport is, where I fly out of. From that direction, again, at about 3,000 to 4,000 feet, because you know where that ridge is that runs along that line is so high. So
that's
you can judge it. It's coming in about 120 knots probably, and I actually see a plane behind it, which is a Cessna. I can see the red light on the left wing. I can see the green light on that. On the right wing, I can see the strobe going off. I recognize that's an airplane. I see a helicopter over here towards 270. This is just this orange fireball just floating through the sky. I'm looking at my wife. I go, what is that? She said, I don't know. Maybe it's a firework. I said, they'll make fireworks that travel that fast.
No. not like that. Okay. Hey, thanks, Michael. No. Thanks a lot. Have you ever seen a UFO, Patrick?
Perhaps I have when I was younger, but I know enough people that claim they have to believe that they're there. There's no question about it. I don't claim to be an experiencer or a contactee, but
But there's definitely so much evidence out there, I could not possibly deny it. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I'll get lucky here someday.
Absolutely. We've got a minute left. What can we look forward to in your best guess, in about the next year?
The next year? Well, I think we're going to see more environmental damage unless we stop these corporations from where they're going. We're going to see the banks getting more control over our lives. I think we're going to rapidly be moving toward that cashless society that we've been speaking of. But I certainly hope, I think there's going to be a consciousness movement, George, that's going to really move forward. And we're certainly going to, with our documentaries, we're certainly going to try to move us in that level.
Very good. Well, you good luck, Patrick. And thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It's a different perspective, and it's one that we really need to listen to. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Pundit and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.